Just one red rose and a tender goodbye.
One last goodbye.
Then I run to the second arrangement. It's only the natural thing. The rule steps out with no regrets. A sparkling
Alright, thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Gaucho Amigos. I'm Alex. Today my guest is Libby Cudmore. She's a writer, podcaster, and a diehard Dan fan. I think she said she's seen them something like 15 times and even contributed a story to A Beast Without a Name, which is a collection of short stories based on Steely Dan songs. Her story is inspired by West of Hollywood. The main topic of our conversation was lost Steely Dan media. This refers to all of the audio and sometimes video footage of Steely Dan from over the years that was not saved or preserved. Stuff like the early Becker and Fagen demos or early 70s live shows, which were mostly unrecorded. And of course, the granddaddy of them all, the infamous lost second arrangement. Now, I recorded this conversation with Libby back in April, so as you'll see in the episode, it's already a bit outdated. You know, I kind of talked about this in the episode I did with IGY Azalea, because there's been this recent surge of interest in Steely Dan, the archaeology of the band's history is still very much in motion, and obviously at the forefront of all of that has been this saga of a mythical second arrangement tape. It's been a real point of obsession for Steely Dan fans for years. And if you've been listening regularly to this podcast, I'm sure you've noticed it comes up in almost every conversation we have on here. Now, I'm not going to give a fully detailed recounting of the entire story. You should definitely check out the two expanding Dan Substack pieces on it, which cover everything in detail, but the basics of it are this. During the recording sessions for Gaucho, a studio engineer accidentally erased what was essentially a finished track called The Second Arrangement, and Donald and Walter were so devastated, they just decided to scrap it. They forgot about it, moved on, never re-recorded it, and would even not acknowledge it when they were asked about it in interviews. However, you know, over the years, some lo-fi demo recordings of the song at various stages of completion emerged, and Steely Dan fans have basically taken it upon themselves to try and recreate the song. You know, it's kind of become this living collaborative art project, you know, fueled in recent years by these online Steely Dan fan communities. I mean, there are literally hundreds of recreation attempts. Some of which are pretty incredible, but you know, because we only had these demo tapes to work with, even the best of these recreations can't overcome the low fidelity. So for years, there is speculation. I guess some would characterize it more as a pipe dream that out there somewhere, there was a second arrangement tape, you know, one that captured the same nearly completed version that was accidentally erased. And then in the summer of 2020, it came out that Simpsy Nichols, who's the daughter of studio engineer Roger Nichols, Roger worked on Gaucho and sadly passed away in 2011. It came out that Simpsy had found a tape labeled The Second Arrangement while going through her dad's archives, a cassette. And she posted a picture of it on Facebook. I think not really knowing the full extent of the stir that this would cause among the kind of Steely Dan fan community. You know, and months went by and there was no real follow-up. Months turned into years. You know, and I personally became very skeptical about the contents of the tape. You know, I figured if there really was something different than the already circulating demo tapes, a version that was higher fidelity or came close to matching the version of the song that was erased that fateful night, you know, it would have already come out. And you'll hear during my conversation with Libby, I basically say as much. I'm perfectly happy to admit that I was dead wrong. A few weeks ago, there was an update from Simpsy that she would be sharing the found tape. You know, keep in mind, this is now nearly 3 years since the initial discovery. So again, I was skeptical. Fast forward to this past Friday, the day of truth. I posted on Twitter, you know, today's the day the second arrangement finally drops. But to be honest, I didn't really know too many details about how it was coming out, you know, what was on the tape. All I knew was that the Expanding Dan Substack would be covering it in some form. So, you know, throughout the day, every hour or two, I'd refresh my inbox to see if the tape had finally gone up. And kind of throughout the day, there was nothing. You know, 1 p.m., I checked, nothing. 4 p.m., 7 p.m., I checked, and still nothing. So, you know, I actually gave up. I thought, you know, this feels like a Friday news dump situation. Whatever's on that tape, you know, it's probably nothing special. And then finally, at around 9 p.m., I suddenly got a notification on my phone. I got a DM from Jake at Expanding Dan with a link to the post. So, you know, I kind of ran over to my computer. I, you know, plugged in my headphones. I quickly scrolled down to the first audio recording, which is just labeled, quote, the Nichols tape. And it's 20 minutes long. And for the first 45 seconds, you know, it's nothing but tape hiss. And then finally, it kicks in. And look, on a philosophical level, there's part of me that thinks we should just leave it alone. You know, history went down the way it did. It's entirely possible that even if the song hadn't been erased, Donald and Walter might have made significant further edits to it or even changed their mind and thrown it out entirely. You know, you can't rewrite history. It was what it was. But, you know, because Gaucho is one of my favorite albums of all time, and because it's only seven songs, and because that album kind of represents this unique moment in time when artists as brilliant as Donald and Walter could really indulge it in the excesses of the studio, you know, there's that lust for just one more hit. And over the years, you know, I've listened to literally dozens of different versions of the second arrangement in various forms. And some of those recreations are great. You know, I listened to some of them, you know, many times, but I have to say, none of them come close to the clarity and the fidelity of the version on the Nichols tape. You know, especially Donald's vocals and the backup singer's vocals in particular. They're clear in a way that's, you know, it's truly a revelation. And I know that Gary Katz and Elliot Shiner, who produced and engineered the album, they've both said that this new tape, this Nichols tape, it's pretty close to what was on that original recording that was erased. So, you know, even though there are a few lines of Donald's vocals missing, you know, it was never going to be a perfect match, obviously, for what would have ultimately ended up on Gaucho. But, you know, this comes close. You know, I think ultimately it's the best outcome we could have hoped for and, you know, real cause for celebration. So, kudos to Simpsy Nichols for the way she handled the rollout. You know, it turns out the reason it took so long is that rather than rush it out into the world, she made sure to take the time to have it presented in the best possible fashion and without risking another, you know, tape snafu. And kudos to Jake of Expanding Din. You know, when I went back and I read the full piece, listening to the tape in the context of the story, you know, I got pretty emotional. You know, the second arrangement thing has been going on for years. So I finally do feel some catharsis around the whole thing. So thanks to him. Thanks to Simpsy. You know, it was just beautiful to see the reactions on Twitter. All the diehard fans, the nerds, they were, you know, just ecstatic that by way of this kind of miracle, we can finally hear this lost treasure. All right. Finally, without further ado, this is my conversation with Libby. Keep in mind, parts of it are now dated. Because we recorded this back in April, when we talk about the second arrangement, it's kind of not up to date, but I think you'll really enjoy our conversation anyway. So here it is.
I'm a millennial, which means I have a boomer dad, and all boomer dads are required by law to listen to Steely Dan. So my dad would play Pretzel Logic in the car.
Oh, yeah.
So I grew up listening to them and kind of veered away from it a little bit. I listened to like the Smiths and a lot of other stuff in college. Always came back to Pretzel Logic. I have such a wide variety of tastes. I always come back to Steely Dan. And then in grad school, my friend Matthew, who I also like feel like should be here with me. because I went to grad school at a low residency program in Maine. And so we drive from New York to Maine twice a year for a 10-day stint. And it's about a 6-hour drive. And we somehow got on the topic of Steely Dan. I was like, oh, I love Steely Dan. I haven't listened to them in forever. And so he brought out the box set, the Citizen box set. And we put it in and we would listen to Steely Dan like straight all the way up to Maine and all the way back. Just like if I was on that road now, I could tell you like where we'd hit for Glamour Profession. Like, oh, this is the area. We usually stop somewhere around, you know, the demo of Everyone's Gone to the Movies. Like
you'd go in chronological order?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
So we'd play the whole thing. And then we'd alternate between, some of the Don solo stuff. Sometimes we'd play Everything Must Go. We really, in our senior year, we got really into Two Against Nature. And so, and like from there, and then once I started getting back into vinyl, it really, really picked up and it sort of became like my thing.
Yeah. So other bands come in and out, but they're kind of always this home base that you kind of go back to and is kind of your, maybe your comfort zone in a way, musically.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about them that, you know, it brings that out of you?
I think with the storytelling aspect, and especially the crime storytelling, just as a writer, I have a story in a Steely Dan anthology.
Yeah. The Beast Without a Name. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Yep, my story is, West of Hollywood. and I think there's something, the music is complex but accessible, because a lot of jazz can be very overwhelming. Like,
yeah,
it's like, how do I enter into this? Where do I start? But you can just start with Steely Dan. You can enter at any point and you're going to have just this incredible music tapestry. And I love that.
Yeah.
They're
a perfect nexus point between like pop and jazz. I mean, that's sort of their thing. And if you grow up listening to pop, but you kind of, you know, jazz, you know, not the easiest thing necessarily for people to dive into, but, you know, Steely Dan's kind of the perfect gateway.
And from there, so you listen to Charlie's band or Parker's band.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go listen to some Charlie Parker, or like it enters into so many different realms. And also it doesn't sound like anybody else. There's so that dark sarcasm, as the yacht rock guys coined, you should have them on at some point.
Yeah, I got
that. I have to give yacht rock a shout out, because I got into yacht rock in grad school as well. So they were definitely part of it. And it's funny because I've seen Donald Fagen live, but when I listen to it, I somehow always picture the guy who played Donald Fagen on Yacht Rock. Like that's who I'm picturing singing, even though I know what Donald Fagen looks like. There was one year, because I have a group of fangirls. We were Yacht Rock show fangirls, and then also the genre. We call ourselves the Babylon Sisters. And there was one year where a bunch of us, there's some of us on the West Coast, some of us on the East Coast. And on the East Coast, Steely Dan was playing with the Doobies opening. And on the West Coast, Michael McDonald, Christopher Cross, and Kenny Loggins were playing. So we were like perfectly, like all of the yacht rock was all right there. If Boz had been playing somewhere else, we would have lost it. That was also 218. We called it the Yacht Rock Rapture, because we figured that Steely Dan was starting just as Christopher Cross was starting, like based on the time zone. And all of those who were truly smooth were ascended into heaven by Coco.
That's great. Yeah.
That was a really good show. They played FM at that show.
Oh, nice. I've only once seen them with an opener, and it was Elvis Costello.
I missed that they didn't
Yeah.
tour near me on that tour, and I fucking love Elvis Costello. I've
Yeah.
been on Dangerous Amusements,
Oh,
talking
is that
about
another
him.
podcast?
Yeah, it's a Elvis Costello
Okay.
podcast.
Yeah.
And I fucking love. I would have like that is like the dream concert.
I mean, I was there for the Elvis Costello, but I was focused on the anticipation of my first Steely Dan show, so
Yes.
I wasn't. And I don't know his, I don't know like the back catalog. I know the hits, I know probably two albums. I think I know Armed Forces pretty well. I'm not as fluent in Elvis.
Yeah, I'm a mid-level Elvis
Okay,
Costello fan. Like, I
mid-level.
love him, but like, there are albums that I just simply do not know. Like, I don't know the
Okay.
Juliet Letters. I'm never going to get around to it. Like, not
So,
when there's other music to listen to.
yeah.
Man
Yeah.
has like 33 albums. I'm not going to get to them all. I only have
Yeah.
one life.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there are certain artists that I'm just never, even though I'm a huge fan, I'm just never like Bowie. I love Bowie. I know maybe like 15 or 20 Bowie albums well, but there's still the like, there's a bunch that I just, it's just probably not going to happen, So,
You admit that to yourself.
yeah, I admit it. I mean, Steely Dan, though, I can say honestly, I've done the work. I've listened to
You have.
all the albums, the solo albums. Now I'm digging, deeper into these other, and we can talk about that. The Rosie Vela. I've been listening to that Linda Hoover album. I mean, I'm going as deep as you can go at this point. So.
Yeah, I haven't got the Linda Hoover. It's a little pricey for me, and I listen to it streaming, and I'm like, this is cool. I'm never going to listen to it. Like, female singer-songwriters are just not where I live.
Really?
Yeah.
Why not?
There's just something I don't like, that kind of folk songy vibe. It's never been my jam.
So kind of like the Joni Mitchell kind of space, or
Yeah.
yeah.
Not where I live. But what we
Yeah.
could talk a little bit about that, because
Yeah.
the Linda Hoover stuff was considered lost jam media for so long, and it's been found.
I turn my friend away when he moans like Leo's Lisa, when he's talking about that piece of pie in the sky that he thinks he's gonna have someday. He clocks his dreams and puts them through their paces. Well, I just wish I had.
Again, like I said, I'm kind of taking my first deeper dive. Obviously, I know the second arrangement because it's such a point of obsession with
Best.
all Steely Dan fans on Twitter. It comes up like every day, literally. When did you first like, do you remember when you first heard about the existence of the second arrangement?
I first heard about it, but I
Yeah.
remember when I first heard it,
Yeah.
which was Rarities Night at the Beacon. I
So you
was
were
there
there
when
that
they.
night in the audience to
I
hear the
was
second.
there. That was my first Steely Dan concert. So my friend Matthew and I. We're in New York. I don't remember why. It was something, maybe a writing retreat. Maybe we were getting ready to go up to grad school. I don't remember, but we saw that they were playing, and we're like, we should go. Because the Beacon was kind of our home theater. He used to live on 73rd. I lived on 74th for a while, so it's right there. We're like, oh, yeah, that'd be cool. So we bought tickets at the door, and. That, I mean, we heard so many great songs that night. They played This All Too Mobile Home, which is considered sort of semi-lost. They played Jack of Speed, which we'll talk about. They played The Bear. And those I actually didn't, I knew about Jack of Speed, but I didn't know about The Bear and This All Too Mobile Home. And Don starts telling the story about one night in the studio, and we're just like, No way. No. Oh my God. This is happening. Oh my God. They're about to play the second arrangement. And
So you
I
knew about
hadn't
it going
heard.
into the show.
Yeah. I hadn't heard the demo at that
Okay.
point. I don't, it might not have even been out. But I sort of knew it kind of from lore. And he played it, and it was amazing. And it was one of those things I thought, well, I'm never going to hear that again. And then I found the demos, and that might be one of my favorite Steely Dan songs. Like, it's so good.
So that's crazy. So your first listen of it was the one time they
The one
played
time.
live. Yeah.
Yep.
Well.
And it's funny, I've never gone back and listened to that concert. Like, because I know there are recordings of it, but I know it won't sound as good as I remember. Because, like, oh, thank you for recording it on your shitty phone, your shitty 2011 phone.
Yeah.
But
Unfortunately, I
it's
wish there was a better soundboard of it, but it's not very good.
I'm
You're not
but
missing
the
much.
demo version, I'm obsessed with that. Not just like we have at least something, but it's such a good, like, almost, I don't want to say I'm mad, but like they should have recorded it again because it's such a good song. It's got everything. It's got, like, because I always feel that Don is the more romantic one. Like, when you listen to their solo stuff, Don is clearly the more romantic, and Walt is a little, not meaner, but a little more sarcastic. But that song is romantic in the strangest way, because it's about having your side piece, but there's still something kind of beautiful about it. That we all kind of at some point want to run off to whatever our second arrangement is, this other life that we have. We all dream of that. And whether that's a vacation, or for me, it's kind of my writing retreat, or going home to Oklahoma, where my family's from. But you always return. It's just that image of the Gladstone bag and the one red rose. It's such a great song, and it's the hook is great. I'm so sad it never got re-recorded. Now, here's my question to you. Obviously, all of us are holding out hope for the found tape. Do you think we'll ever hear what's on that tape?
Here's my thing. I don't think there's anything that we haven't already heard out there. So I feel like if there are other demo tapes circulating, I would imagine they're similar to what we already have. I mean, I know of three very distinctly separate versions. There's the one where it's just Don on the piano, I think. And that actually is the highest quality, but it's literally just Don on the, it's like Don solo piano. And then I've heard two in two with the backing, and each version has different lyrics. There's the Buongiorno Baby version is what I call it, but then the other version doesn't have that lyric. So there are some really, really good versions now, I
Yeah,
think.
people have done a lot of work to clean them up over the years, which thank you for your service to the Dan community.
Yeah. There was one incredible one that was posted on YouTube last year that I've been like listening to a lot. It's just, it's good.
Such an incredible song, and it's such a shame that their studio perfectionism, which we love them for, kind of got in the way of giving us this incredible song. It's like, why?
Yeah, why couldn't they
9 hours
just
spent on the
give it
well,
another?
then, or well, the. Take that again. 9 hours on the well, the.
Yeah, that's the one of the paradoxes is if you take away the perfectionism, do you get the quality, of those out? That's the ultimate, because some would say yes. And I talked to the author of that Nightfly book that came out last year for this podcast, and he actually thought that they would have been better off had they been less perfectionist.
Maybe, although if you listen to some of the early demos, like Come Back Baby or their version of Don't Let Me In, they're, if they had let those come out, then I argue they wouldn't have been the Steely Dan we know. They're brilliant songwriters, but they flag on some of these. Have you heard Sneaker's version of Don't Let Me In?
What sneaker?
Sneaker's another, it's a rock band from the
Oh,
80s.
they did Don't Let Me In, because I know the demo.
No, they do an incredible version of
I'm
it.
writing this down. Hold on. All right.
And
I'm gonna.
actually, that was the one I knew first, and then I got the
Okay.
demos, and I was like, this is milquetoast. This is mid, as the kids say.
I hear you found a brand new friend. Well, if I try to take you back again, if I decide to make amends, don't let me in. You know I've got to be inside, but don't you listen when you hear me cry. Not even just to say goodbye. Don't let me in.
There are good covers of Steely Dan, but the ones that are not good, it's a little rough sometimes when they don't
The
capture the essence. They don't capture that sarcasm or the irony or whatever.
is weird when one of them does, like Sneaker doing Steely Dan better than Steely Dan did, is kind of fascinating. I'm really excited because this summer I'm getting to go see Amy Mann, and I was furious when they bumped her from the tour. I thought that was horseshit. Because especially as more women are getting into Steely Dan, which as I said before, it wasn't always a really welcoming space for women. And now some of the biggest Steely Dan fans I know are women, which I love. So to have Amy Mann open, I thought would have been a really good bridge. And she loves Steely Dan. Like she loves them so much. She did an article for like a albums that made me, I think, for Pitchfork, and Can't Buy a Thrill is on there.
It also would have been
But
a great bridge to the sort of now, because I feel like she's really, really well respected in sort of indie music circles. You know, like she's, you know, kind of been, you know, I mean, from all the way back in the 80s, hasn't she been kind of a trailblazing indie singer-songwriter? And now that Steely Dan has kind of captured that space a little bit more than they used to, wouldn't that have been a great bridge? But
also just because, again, her lyrics are dark and sarcastic, and also then I wouldn't have had to go see two concerts. I could have got two of her concerts for one. But she's doing Brooklyn now, and I'm hoping that she will do it when I see her this summer.
Yeah.
Really, really holding out for hearing Amy Mann do Brooklyn, because I've heard her version and it's really good. But one of the other things they played at Rarity's Night was The Bear, which is another, it's been found, but it's a Gaucho outtake. That one's not my favorite, I have to be honest. Like it's very Walter. As I said, it's a little dark. I'm glad that I got to hear it. I probably wouldn't skip over it on a record. I might skip over it on a CD.
Yeah, I like that song a lot. I can see why it didn't quite make the cut. It's kind of on the cusp of being like, and this is why I don't know, you know, I don't know what the holdup is, and maybe you have a different take on this, but it would be nice for Steely Dan to do some sort of official release of, you know, these songs that are finished or close to finished, like The Bear, unlike the second arrangement, sounds pretty, you know, final. But it's still never been officially released, and I don't know. I feel like that one, or even maybe a Coolie Baba, you know, it would be nice to see them do that. But you know, we have them on YouTube, I guess. But Don is more interested in doing, you know, another remaster of Countdown to Ecstasy, even though we know every song on that.
Yeah, that weirds me out. One of the things that I kind of wonder is how much of that stuff was lost in the Universal Fire.
Yep.
Oh, I mean, those masters may not exist anymore.
Yeah, one
So
thing I've
that.
also been kind of pining for. So I don't know if you're like you know, these sort of seminal bands like Beach Boys, for example. I don't know if you're a Beach Boys fan, but like
Not really, but
they did. So they do these releases where it's like a literally 6 CD release of one album, and it's just
yeah.
every single thing that was recorded during the sessions. So it's like you'll get a whole album of like every, like the one for the Smile sessions for the Beach Boys. It's like one CD is literally one song. It's just like Good Vibrations, and it's every take and every instrument isolated. And I don't know, I think it would be fun to hear the Asia, you know, 6 CD every, you know, I mean, it would have to be like 20 CDs probably, but that's not going to be Donald's thing, you know. It's just,
No, and I'm okay with that. I've got some demo stuff. Like I've got the demo for The Replacements Please to Meet Me, which is my favorite Replacements album. I never listened to them. Like it's cool to have, but I'm not gonna like I know what Valentine sounds like. I'm not gonna listen to the demo version. But one of the things I would love to personally hear, and what's kind of my personal Steely Dan, like lost media. I'd love to hear all of the other takes of the Peg solo.
See,
We hear some of them.
that could be one of the CDs.
We hear some of them on the behind the album, but I want to hear all of them.
This is probably the last guy to try it before Jay did it. Here's another one. And what is that? Some kind of little envelope filter thing he's got going there on his guitar? Didn't you hear that someone did this to you? And then finally, Jay Graydon came in and did it with no difficulty whatsoever. Sort of a Hawaiian section.
Yeah, that's
there.
Kind of a Polynesian.
Sort of prefigured my own later residence in Hawaii.
Funny, because like there's a lot of like albums around Steely Dan that never got released. Obviously, the Linda Hoover was locked up for so long, and Rosie Vela, she had a second album called Sun Across the Altar
Okay.
that when Zazu failed, they just shelved. It's just locked up in a vault somewhere, and we're never gonna hear it, and that makes me really mad.
They finished the whole album?
The album's done.
Wow. It's just not re never released in any form. There's no demos,
There's
nothing.
nothing. There's no demos. There's no single.
But did
There's.
Gary Katz and the gang work on it or not?
Don't know if Walt and Don did. I know she's dating the guy from ELO, so he might have been on it.
Good
Nothing
one.
is known about it, except that we don't have it. We're never gonna have it. The release, Linda Hoover buying back her masters and getting that released is a good start. So, like Rosie, please let us have this.
Yeah, I don't know if Rosie has any control over the situation. It could be like the, you know, Universal or whatever. I mean, it could be gone too, and you know, it could be lost in the fire. Who knows?
But it's just it's one of those things that we may never get. I'm so glad you like Zazu.
It's crazy. If that album came out today, the music blogs would be shitting themselves. The whole presentation too. I mean, she's beautiful. She has a very unique voice. The production is incredible. The songs are interesting. I mean, just the whole thing. I feel like it would be, she would have been massive, and just for whatever reason, it didn't catch on.
We have to get some TikTok teens to like rediscover her. But I am glad, and I'm not saying I spearheaded the renaissance of Rosie Vela, but I kind of did because again, I was like, you need to listen to this. Like it was one of those records that I was handing out to people. It's like people need to love Rosie Vela. I need people to love her as much as I do.
You love me and then go away. Sleep.
one of the things that attracts me to Lost Media is this idea that somebody has seen this, somebody has heard this, but this fragment might be the only thing we have. This, you know, however, what, 19 seconds?
Yeah.
Of the second arrangement, that's all that we have of this. And somebody heard it. Somebody in the studio was there when they recorded it. They remember recording it, but it all just exists in this very ephemeral space. And I love that. And to know that there are things we cannot have because they are gone or because they only exist in one format, that we have to have all these different things to play. Do you watch Cowboy Bebop at all? Are you a full nerd or okay? There's an episode where they find a tape and they have to go back and find on Earth a VCR. But it turns out that it's beta, so they have to go back to Earth and find this other lost format.
Wow.
And I don't know. You think about the movies that we're not going to see. You think about the DVD collection that Netflix is about to get rid of.
Yeah.
Like that Library of Alexandria moment. And even so, just going back to Steely Dan, obviously, Walk It Like You Talk It or You Lose That Beat does not exist. There are no copies for sale on eBay. It's not on Tubi. And if it's not on Tubi, it might as well not exist because Tubi is the trash video store that keeps us running.
Right. Yeah, Tubi is become kind of an incredible library of just like, you know, movie history in this weird way because it's just, it's sort of anything can be on there, it seems.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Tubi is majestic. But I mean, it's not on YouTube. You cannot find this film. We know it existed. We know people saw it. There are reviews of it. They're all bad. Apparently there's a scene with Donald Fagen.
Oh, he's in the movie? I don't think I realized that.
Very briefly. And apparently a scene that's not funny. We're never going to see it. We don't know what happened to Walk It Like You Talk It. Lose That Beat. And maybe through this beautiful podcast that you do, you will find somebody who worked on it and they will give you a copy and like you can release it to the people. But, and that is the power. That's the power of media, my friends.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's
an power of telecommunications.
Yeah. That's the irony of the digital age is, you know, we have such, it's so easy just to, you know, upload any song or any video, any, you know, it can exist in this space, but at the same time, I feel like we aren't doing our part to preserve, you know, the, you know, cultural history of, you know, these, you know, the corporations that are kind of in charge of these things are not incentivized to, you know, maintain, you know, some of these things that are, you know, honestly important parts of cinema history, of music history, or, you know, television history, et cetera. So,
And I mean, there's something like I don't remember if it's 80 or 90%, but like silent films, they're gone.
Yeah.
Most of them, more than I think it's somewhere around 80% of silent films they're lost. We're never gonna see them again. I do a podcast called the OST Party, which focuses on movie soundtracks. We did the soundtrack to Myself and Irene, which is Steely Dan. So often when we do this podcast, in our research, into each artist on the soundtrack, we see that terrible Wikipedia line, which is their music was believed to be lost in the universal fire.
Yep.
And we have so much music. I mean, there's tons and we have recordings of it, but what we don't have are those demos. What we don't have are those outtakes. What we don't have are those songs that maybe weren't going to make this album, but might make the next one. Or what would become, you know, you think about the songs that would become Third World Man, which I think The Bear sounds way too close to Third World Man.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you can kind of hear like what they extrapolated from that to move over to Third World Man.
Let's say you went to a Steely Dan show and they played something that's kind of off the usual. Which songs would you most want to hear?
Like to hear King of the World.
Hmm. That's
really
one of my favorites too.
It's so good. Again, a bromance. Have you ever heard Joe Jackson's version of it?
I think I have, yeah.
I actually almost prefer that version.
Yeah.
And it's, I think they're actually like equal because I like that it's slightly up tempo.
Yeah.
I like the sort of dust that's around the Steely Dan version. Like it feels much more sun-baked.
It does.
But I like the urgency of the Joe Jackson version. And just again on covers, I gotta say Boz Scaggs version of Pearl of the Quarter, superior to the Dan. Boz kills it.
Yeah, I think that song is better suited to other. It's a good song, but it's not, again, it's not one of my favorite Steely Dan songs because I feel like it almost sounds like not them in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And there's this weird tradition in yacht rock of songs about men falling in love with sex workers because you've got the Pages Cestacia, you've got Pearl of the Quarter. It's just like this weird thing where like
it's
men in yacht rock songs are always falling in love with sex workers. Amelia by Young Gun Silver Fox.
Yeah.
Now,
I don't know them, but.
Oh, Young Gun Silver Fox are like the kind of one of these bands that's like new yacht rock.
Yeah, yacht rock.
They're
revival.
Really, really good.
Yeah, I'll check them out.
Yeah, Amelia's a great song. I learned about them through the Beyond Yacht Rock podcast, as
oh,
I did
wow.
Pages. Pages.
Pages,
produced,
I love.
Yeah.
That one album, or is it two out? They have a couple albums, right?
Three.
Three, right.
They've got Pages One, Future Street, and then Pages.
The one with You Need a Hero is the one that I was spinning a lot.
Yeah.
Last summer, and I'm definitely going to bring it back this summer because it's the best summer album.
Yeah, OCOE, incredible.
So good, yeah. So yeah, so I do want to hear more about the Beast Without a Name book that you were involved in. Like, how did that project come about, and you know, how did you get, you know, why did you write about West of Hollywood?
I don't know how it came about, but like most things involving Steely Dan, like this podcast, I elbowed my way in. Were they sort of like, don't you know who I am? I'm the architect of contemporary Steely Dan fandom, because I'd heard about it, and I emailed the editor like, you have to let me in.
Yeah.
I'm Libby Cudmore. I'm the biggest Steely Dan fan on the planet.
So you knew that the book was happening.
Yes.
And you,
how
you
I found
it.
I think somebody told me about it. And I'm like, put me in this fucking book. And
had you
I'm
done
very...
crime writing before that? Or no?
Oh, yeah. My first novel, Big Rewind, is all crime.
So it's perfect for you. It married your crime writing experience to your Steely Dan fandom experience.
Yes, it did. Most of the big songs, like the songs people know, had been chosen. So I was really, really into Two Against Nature at that point and went with West of Hollywood. Because there's a wide absurdity to that song that I felt like would lend itself to not retelling the song. And I had this, I think we struggled with this a little bit. I did a Warren Zevon anthology, same kind of thing, songs inspired by Warren Zevon songs. And I think the temptation sometimes is to just write the song when it's really supposed to be more inspired by. So my song was about these two grifters who come together for one last job, west of Hollywood.
But was it specifically inspired by characters or events within the Steely Dan song, or no? Is it loose?
Sure, but it was really kind of the feeling of
West
of Hollywood, which feels very much like two people who are just kind of people in a couple who are getting distant, like something far more than their relationship can handle.
Okay.
Has come between them and like trying to hold on to this fracturing relationship.
Got it.
And I wanted to kind of play with that a little bit while also adding a crime element.
So it's kind of more inspired by your feelings around the song or your feelings around the album than like the specific characters. Yeah. Like there's no I can't even think of the characters in that because it's a long song.
Yeah, they're really, no one is given any names except the therapist, Dr.
Yeah,
Warren Kruger.
Warren Kruger. Is there a Warren Kruger in your short
There
story or
is
no?
not.
Okay, so you took it in this sort of more vague direction where you didn't use the, characters in the bit. Do other stories in the anthology do that or not?
Some of them do. My
Yeah,
friend
because I haven't
Matthew
read it.
had a story. I'm totally blanking on what his story was. Oh, no. My friend Matthew had a story. He did Monkey in Your Soul.
Okay.
His story is, it's one of the best ones in the anthology. Like, I
Yeah.
think West of Hollywood is great, but Monkey in Your Soul is incredible. Like, he managed to work each line
Wow.
in through the story. It's unreal.
I
Yeah, his
may
story
have to
is,
check
it's
this out. I mean, it's such a yeah, I mean, I love the creative kind of the creativity to do something like this project, like to do a whole crime inspired anthology is just like it's a pretty out there idea, but it
Well,
makes
Steely Dan
sense.
has always had that. I taught
Definitely.
a class in crime fiction in music, and we one of the songs I taught was With a Gun,
Wow.
because it's a very defined narrative.
Crime fiction and music. Was it like in pop songs mostly, like Steely or in rock? That's a great idea. Who, what other, I guess Zevon was probably there too.
Yeah, definitely Zevon. I know we
Okay.
did Goodbye Earl by the Dixie Chicks.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago, but I remember. Yeah, I think Excitable Boy was in there. It was fun. It was a really, really fun class. But yeah, I write a lot from music. My first novel revolved around a mixtape. Actually, the first chapter in that is Brooklyn Owes the Charmer Under Me. And that was my song that I would play. Like, I'd put it on and be like, it's now my writing time. This is my writing song. And I specifically made it. It takes place in a fictional neighborhood in Brooklyn. And I made it so that she goes downstairs to talk to her neighbor, who, as it turns out, has been murdered. So they're actually, it's the charmer under me refers to her neighbor.
Oh,
So
wow.
it's little things like that. This is
Okay.
the kind of nerd shit that I do.
Yeah, so you kind of like, but you use these little, it's like Steely Dan is this sort of like inspiration machine or something. You kind of take these
Yes,
little
and like
nuggets.
it ends up in like
Yeah.
weird, dumb places. Like, it's never direct, but there's a character in The Big Rewind named Josie. I've got a character in a series I have at Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine named Gina. They appear, and it's more to amuse myself, and because I'm not necessarily good at coming up with names, so I always pull from different songs. Like, there's a Gloria. In The Big Rewind, just pulling from all these different characters.
Yeah, I mean they're frequently one of the most beloved bands among creative people, I think, especially writers.
Yeah.
So it
Because
makes
their
sense.
storytelling is so elaborate and it's
Yeah.
so unexpected.
Uptown, it's murder out in the street.
And the Nightfly Live. I'm in that audience.
Okay. Where are you at in the on the
We
recording?
sit in the back, what we used to call Don side. So that's the right side, the
Okay.
stage left. And we always sit in the back so no one can fucking talk behind us.
Got
Because
it.
that's where, like, no one is allowed to talk. No one is allowed to have their phone. It's a religious experience. Everybody shut up. No, I
The
don't want to see
back
people
upper
dancing.
deck, nosebleeds. That doesn't bother you being far?
No, because I can't have people talking behind me. I just
Okay.
want to like sit and enjoy the Dan. And John Mulaney talks about this. I'm going to see Steely Dan at the Beacon, where like we sit very politely, like that's what you do at Steely Dan at the Beacon. It's like a church experience.
So you're against the whole thing where Pete Davidson got up and everyone was like
I would have been so mad. I would have been so mad.
I don't think we need to really worry that that's going to become a thing, you know, in the future. It was just a one-off.
Crazy people at Steely Dan shows. And it's always like kind of embarrassing. Like you really like can't dance to Steely Dan. Like it's not. So they're just like all like weird mom dancing. And they've all had like several beers. And it's like, sit down, Linda. Please.
Well, it depends a little bit on also the a Beacon is more of a seated formal affair compared to like a summer Dying night at an amphitheater. I don't know. I feel like you're going to be a Crazy. Few beers in by the time they even go on at that point. So I just let the boomers loose.